Welcome to Real Money with Lisa Chastain. Over the next hour, you will hear from leading industry experts how to establish financial confidence and freedom. Her guests will motivate and inspire you to make those financial decisions that you have been thinking about for weeks and maybe even years. Now, here's your host, Lisa Chastain.
Happy Monday. If you're listening to us live, we have a good number of people who are starting to listen to us live. So I'm so grateful that you're here. If you're listening as a replay, same thing. Just grateful that you've tuned into the Real Money Show today. I'm your host, Lisa Chastain. I've got a pretty cool guest here today. Her name is Jamie. Jamie, how do you say your last name?
Bateau.
I didn't want to butcher it.
It's French.
It's French. Jamie Bateau is someone that I've met in Las Vegas. We are in the money industry in different ways. We're a part of Robin Crane's world. Shout out Robin Crane. Mm-hmm. That's how we met. And I invited Jamie into the studio today because in different ways, we're both on a mission to impact the lives of others when it comes to money. And she's a woman, which fits in the real money scheme of things. And she's got a really cool story, which as a listener, you should know, I don't know the whole story. So Jamie and I have had interactions in different ways. I've had the opportunity of coaching her as a newer person in the money industry. How long have you been in the money industry?
It's going to be 4 years in August.
4 years. Okay. So somewhat newer.
So kind of new.
Yeah. But something they don't talk a whole lot. I mean, it's assumed that in the money industry that you have to do sales, but the money industry doesn't do a great job of teaching people how to sell in a way that really works. So that's kind of the backstory is that I do some coaching on that. And that's how Jamie and I met. The real reason she's here though, is that I really love her as a person. And for our listeners, it's really important. I want guests who are relatable. I want guests who you can learn from. And Jamie comes to us as someone not only who is in the money industry, but is newer to money. I would say that you had your own journey in learning about money, and that's the real stuff. And she's open to sharing that with you today. So, Jamie, sure. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. So I'm Jamie Bateau. I'm a How Money Works educator. And honestly, the reason why I chose this career, actually switch of career, which you're about to hear about a little bit, is because I recognize that people not knowing about money is a huge issue. Like the reason why we have so many problems is in this country is because we don't know anything about money, mm-hmm. including the government, you know, how much debt are we in now?
Oh, geez. Trillions,
right? So that's the reason that, you know, I saw that there was a huge problem that I wanted to fix, not only in my family, because I recognized it in my family, but also in my community. As a woman of color, I was just seeing nobody being helped. Mm. And that's why I wanted to be that person.
You get to be.
Yeah.
And I know you are. I know you're helping a lot of people. So before we started the show, we were talking about how we wanted to work the show. And I always like having a real conversation about you. And as a listener, we're getting a ton of feedback that's really valuable, that they're enjoying hearing the stories that are coming along with the information. Of course, we want to be able to give information that is supportive. We want women to be a part of the show and listen to the show and learn more about money. Mm-hmm. But it always starts with a story.
For sure. It needs to resonate.
It needs to resonate. So let's take a journey.
Oh, fun.
So what age are you now? How young are you?
I am 31.
31.
32 this year.
Okay, cool. 30 in October.
In October.
Yeah. She's a Libra, which we talked about before the show, but now you know as a listener too. So you were raised in California.
Yeah,
or no, you were born
in California. Yep.
And you moved to Vegas.
Mm-hmm. When I was 1 year old, my dad wanted to, you know, start anew. Like this was brand new for, like, Vegas was still growing, you know, there was like mm-hmm. still a lot of dirt. My dad wanted to, you know, get his own house here, build his own house here. And that's where we were raised.
What
we
part
were
of
still
town?
In the same house, Henderson.
Okay.
My dad is still living there. My mom's still there. Grandma's there. Yeah.
And he built a house.
Well, from what I recall, yes.
Okay.
They were still building, in that area, 'cause it was all dirt. They built one of the first houses in that neighborhood, and yeah, and that's where we're still at. At least they're still at.
Yeah. And what schools did you go to?
I went to Thurman White Middle School. Well, I also went to the elementary schools around there, but I'm forgetting the name.
That's okay.
Jim Thorpe and all that stuff. But Thurman White Middle School and then Green Valley High School.
Ah, Shane was on the show last week, and she's a Green Valley High School graduate.
Cool.
Too.
I'm not a graduate.
You're not a graduate.
I was only there for 1 year, and my dad shipped me off to boarding school.
So are you serious?
Yeah. So actually, I'm a private school student. So I went to school in Massachusetts, Deerfield Academy. Totally weird.
What?
Totally weird. Because I wasn't expecting that. He kind of put Kate, like, it kind of came out of nowhere. My dad was like, okay, you spent a year at Green Valley. Like, I want you to go to boarding school now to basically follow in the footsteps of your cousins. Because all my cousins went to Exeter and Choate Academy, like all these things.
I've never heard of those.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. It's
all these
private schools.
Okay. Know?
All these private schools on the other side of the country.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. At the age of what, 14, 15?
What age is, 10th grade?
10th. Okay.
I don't know what that is. Oh, 10th. Oh, I'm not talking
about that. Yeah.
10th grade. That's when I went to Massachusetts. It was a very scary part of my life because I was leaving all my friends that I made. I was 2,000 miles away from my parents. Like, it was crazy.
Wow.
And a very, very big culture shock.
Oh, right. I can imagine. So let's kind of take a step back and talk about in the real money essence. Knowing what you know now and looking back at your childhood, what did you experience, see, make up about money as a child, reflecting on your parents' decisions that they made? Did you, and maybe, you know, some people will say that they didn't have any thoughts or experiences, but what were yours?
My parents never talked about money, so I didn't know anything about it. I remember the only thing that my dad ever said was, make sure you save money. But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just make sure you put your money in, like, create a bank account, you know, once you turn however age, I don't know. And then, you know, put money in that, make sure you're saving. And that's all I ever really learned. One of the other things he said is, once you turn 18, get a credit card so you can build your credit. And those are the two things I remember him ever, you know, telling me about. Otherwise we never talked about money. Every time I asked about it, they were like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Like, it's not your job. I was one of those kids that when my parents came home with something in their hands, like they bought something, I was like, how much was that? Why did you buy that? Like, I was actually the one who was policing my own parents when it comes to that stuff. So for some reason, I had always been... I don't know if you ever talked about this on your show, but with Robin's, like, different money types, a cheap chip. Like, I was always that way, which I don't know where it really came from. Maybe it was just because of my parents and the fact that they don't talk about money. I always thought we were lacking it.
Mm.
So I was like, why are you buying things? If we're lacking, why are you buying all this stuff we don't need? So that kind of just got ingrained in my mind.
Yeah. It could be something that you made up. And for those of you who are curious, we've talked about the money types a lot on this show, but I've never really talked about what they are because I've had different guests who know what they are. So as a listener, just keep an eye out for a show coming up in July. And I'm going to talk about what the money types are and what they mean. So to reference Jamie, the cheap chip is someone who tends to be more logical and sensible and sometimes can be in scarcity. A lot of the times actually lives in scarcity when it comes to money. So there's some fear around it. I think it sounds like you just were like being more sensible about it and curious about it, but also because it wasn't spoken about, that you somehow interpreted that there wasn't any. Knowing now as an adult what your parents are, you know, what their lives are like, do you think that's true? Was there truly not any money, or that was just your experience of it?
I don't think it's that we didn't have money. It's maybe we just didn't have enough in their mind. In their mind, their belief was, we don't have enough money for anything. So I was always hearing, you know, we can't afford that, or, you know, we can't do that right now. And then, but at the same time, I see them spending on things that we're only going to use once or never use ever. And it's just like, it was just this hypocrisy I was seeing. And I realized that I wasn't going to do that for myself growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. That's perfect. Perfect illustration of how we make decisions of based on what we experience about whether or not we actually have those conversations. We still get to, we still decide at a certain point. Mm-hmm. So you went to boarding school. Yeah. I am like nervous for you. Okay.
Gotta block it out.
Yeah. And then from boarding school, you graduated from that boarding school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what was your journey like after that?
Because I got used to being away from my parents and kind of liking being away, I went to school in New York. So I was in Massachusetts for high school and then New York for college. So I went to Vassar College, Poughkeepsie, New York. That was, you know, super fun. I graduated, I majored in computer science and met a lot of amazing people, fell in love with something I didn't realize I was going to fall in love with, like computer science. So yeah, it was a good time.
Okay.
For the most part.
Did you go on scholarship?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much almost the entire thing scholarship because the tuition there is not cheap.
No.
It's a private college. Tuition was $55,000 a year. Got a scholarship. I only paid probably $45,000 for the entire 4 years there. Awesome. So that was my student loan.
Okay.
$45,000 around.
Okay. Could have been worse.
Could have been worse. It's still not great to pay all that, but it could have been worse. You're right.
So software engineering, you loved that. And you went, you know, Vegas to Massachusetts to New York, West Coast to East Coast, very different lifestyles, very different ways of life.
For sure.
And at some
grateful
point.
Grateful for it too.
Yeah. What did you learn? What did you learn about some of those different experiences from Massachusetts to New York to Vegas?
I think the majority of it is just meeting people, meeting different types of people. Because if I stayed maybe only in Vegas, I would have only, you know, met a certain type of person. But going to boarding school, that's an entirely different thing, entirely different socioeconomic, you know, type of people. Like these were like
very wealthy people.
Very wealthy, like super wealthy. Mm-hmm. Like, have you heard of Hess Gas?
No.
There was like the son or the daughter of someone who owns that gas company. I was just like, I think there was a granddaughter of McDonald's there or something like that. I was like, okay, yeah. Why am I here again? But it's really just getting that, just understanding people a little bit better that I wouldn't have encountered.
Yeah.
Ever in my life before. And then going to school in New York, another culture shock as well. Different types of people, different types of environment, even just the weather, understanding the weather over there is,
totally
is crazy different than Las Vegas. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I think it was really just about the people and the environment, just having that. So I can now I can resonate with people who are in extreme cold and extreme heat. for my entire life.
Yeah.
Now. I think that's mostly what it is.
What brought you back to Las Vegas?
I wanted to be by my parents. Mm-hmm. Like I had my time away, you know. I lived for majority of my high school and majority of my college in the East Coast. So I wanted to be here for them and just in case something were to happen. Mm-hmm. They are older. I'm actually a very old baby. It took me 13 years. It took my mom 13 years to
wow.
make me. Yeah. She tried many, many times. So I was the first after 13 years of trying.
Wow.
So they're older, you know, and I want to make sure that I'm here for them.
What do you think? So knowing that they tried for 13 years and then at sophomore year in high school, they decided to send you to boarding school.
What? Not my mom, my dad.
Your dad. Yeah. Got it. What was behind that decision for your dad? Was it moving you into a different socioeconomic world? Was it to give you better opportunities? What was that decision for him?
Yeah, he believed that I'd get a way better education over there than I would in Las Vegas. So that's why he wanted to do that. And I'm sure it's because of getting independence as well, like being outside of the nest, would help me grow in life. Would, you know, but it's mostly about the education. My dad is very, very, very into education.
Yeah.
So that's, that was his reasoning.
So let's switch gears. Mm-hmm. You went to Vassar College. Yeah. You had a career in software engineering, and you got a job here in Vegas mm-hmm. to do software engineering. Yep. Okay. So, you know, I hope you can follow Jamie on social media. She's got a really cool personality. She draws a lot too. I just think you have a lot of talents, and software engineering requires a really high level of intelligence and also a lot of hard work. What did you love about that career? Cause you're 31. So it was like a short-lived career.
It was very short. Yeah. 5.5 years of yeah. doing that. What did I love about it?
That's yeah. What did you love about it?
I loved the structure of it. I loved the creativity of it, oddly enough. A lot of people, when it comes to tech, people don't think that it's creative, but I am a very creative person. I've been drawing since I was 4. Mm-hmm. You're basically creating something from scratch, just like what you are with art, except you're just writing letters because you're coding, right? So you're creating something from nothing. And I think that's the best. That was the what intrigued me the most about it, because I was taught, when I first, one of my first classes at Vassar for computer science was creating a game. Like, we got to create like a ball bouncing around the thing, and we had to like interact with it and stuff like that, or like a side scroller game. And I was like, holy crap, I can make this? Like, I can program this to happen. That means I can make anything. So that's what really, really got me excited about that career, about programming. Yeah. So that was, it was really just the creativity of it. The fact that I can, the sky's the limit when it comes to that stuff. So I didn't really have a path. I mm-hmm. didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew that I like to create, mm-hmm. I like to build something from nothing. And I love the structure of it, 'cause I'm a very structured person. I don't know where it came from. I would think my dad, but then I look at his office and I don't understand. But I think some of it came from him for sure. So the structure, the creativity, the just the infinite amount of stuff you can do with it. Mm-hmm. That's what really attracted me to it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then you left.
And then I left. Because, man, my first year, I was so excited. So at this company I was working at, it was a manufacturing company in Las Vegas. And I was so excited because I was making robots. They were having me like make robots, like because they create robots. Mm-hmm. I was doing electronic stuff. So I was learning all this stuff I never really learned in school, because I didn't do electronics. I was just programming. So I was super excited about that. I was like, oh my goodness, the learning curve here is like, this is amazing. Like, I'm learning all this stuff. That was my first year. But then afterwards, it kind of became the same thing every single day. And I kind of got bored with it. Mm. You know, it started being that I wasn't growing anymore. Like, I felt like I wasn't growing. I felt like I couldn't grow as a person there. I felt like I couldn't, my creative juices weren't being used, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Like, I didn't know what to do. I felt stuck. Mm-hmm. I felt stuck, and I didn't want to go somewhere else because I felt like I would just be in the same exact position no matter where I went. Mm-hmm. And I started to not like programming anymore.
Head down work.
Yeah. I started I felt like it was just, there's a term in the industry called code monkey. It's basically just, hey, do this and program it. It's like, this is what we were designed, program it now. It's like, I didn't want to be that.
No. You're way too talented for that. Way too much to offer. Yeah.
So I started getting jaded about it. You know, I started not wanting to do it. I just turned my brain off and I was like, okay, I'm just going to, I need to pay off my student loans. Mm-hmm. I need to get my debt in order because I don't want to be in my loan for my car. I didn't want to be in loan for my student loans anymore. So I was just like, okay, I'm just going to do this job as a job. And that's it. That's why I stopped liking it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't see a path forward. I was like, I can't do this for 40 years.
No,
I can't see myself doing this for 40 years.
And so now 4 years later, you're in a much more entrepreneurial kind of role, which seems like it really suits you. let's take the listener on that journey of you knew there was an intuition.
Oh yeah.
And there, especially having gone through the pandemic, there are so many women that are in careers, in jobs, young women, old women who are feeling the same way. Mm-hmm. They're like, I'm stuck. I don't see any upward mobility. Mm-hmm. I don't see that I'm actually going to be able to use all of my talents here. I can't grow here. And you made a decision to leave. What was that? How did you do that? So the motivation was to get out of debt, and then what?
Yeah. So I guess to go back a little bit, during that time that I was unhappy, I was searching for something else. I knew I wanted to be in entrepreneurship because ever since second grade, I was an entrepreneur. I was selling little drawings to my classmates and stuff like that. So I was looking for something, and I found Etsy. I found someone creating jewelry online, and I was like, I can do that. I'm an artist. I can make that stuff. So long story short, I started making facial expression jewelry. And I did that for a couple of years, and I loved every second of it because I was the boss.
Yes.
I was the one who was creating everything. I had to engineer the jewelry. I had to do all this stuff, and then I had to sell it. It was like all these hats that I didn't know were possible, right, mm-hmm. for me. So that I loved every aspect of that, except I wasn't passionate about creating jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
So that ended that career, okay. or that stint.
That
there.
Stint, yeah.
Yeah. So I was looking for something else again, because I wanted to be passionate about it. I wasn't going to put in all this work and time and energy into something I wasn't passionate mm-hmm. about. And I was approached by my cousin about an opportunity, you know, being in the financial industry. And I was like, I don't know anything about that. That's okay. But he was like, no, like it's financial education. I was like, wait, I don't know anything about that. I want that. I'll take that. So I got into it in the premise that I was going to learn.
Mm.
And man, the first 2 weeks I learned more than I have ever learned in my entire life. And
because up until that point, just interject really quick yeah. and we'll keep going with that, is up until that point, you had learned how to make money, spend money, get out of debt
yeah.
and save money. That's those right. are like the wheelhouses, right? But you didn't really know how money worked. Had you ever gone down that like financial education
Never.
Route? Okay.
I thought it was good. I was doing all the stuff that all the other engineers were doing.
Yeah.
So I just need a 401k. I just need to save. I just need to do this. I just need to do that. And I'm good. There's mm-hmm. money in the bank, whatever. That's all. I thought it was good. And then when I went through the process at this financial company, I realized, holy crap, I'm only doing step zero here.
Yeah.
As an engineer, I started
I
zero.
Know nothing.
I know nothing. I don't know how to grow my money. I've been squandering it for the last 6 years because I wasn't actually, you know, using compound interest in my favor. I was like, how come nobody told me about this stuff? Mm-hmm. I just wasted so many years.
Yep. Getting out of debt, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And putting money, saving. Right?
I was saving. I was a great yeah. saver. I was a fantastic saver, but
cheap chips are really good savings.
I had 2 years of savings.
Uh-huh.
And I realized how little I knew
mm.
on how to grow it, how to protect it, how to make sure that it lasts a lifetime, how to make sure that you leave a legacy.
Right.
Like I didn't know any of that stuff.
Right. So like
it blew my mind.
Blew your mind. And as a scientist, I like that. I never heard that before, that you started step zero.
That was step zero. That's where you start.
And we have a few minutes before break, so we're going to come back to this conversation. But I think that's such an important point to make, is that most people spend their whole lives at step zero when it comes to money. Women, especially, mm-hmm. that women are behind the eight ball in financial education.
Right.
And there are a lot of money coaches, money experts out there, and not many of them have a formal financial education mm-hmm. either. Mm-hmm. So what do they learn? It's step zero. They learn how to pay off debt. They learned how to maybe, you know, what the difference between a Roth IRA and IRA is. They learned how to maybe save money in abundance. But the things that we're talking about, like how money really works, it's really people in the money industry get it, know it, do it. You just got your licenses, right? Like to know it. And you're now on a mission to help bridge that gap for other people. Mm-hmm. So in a couple, you know, with a couple of minutes to break, help us understand what were the big things in those first couple of weeks where we were like, oh my gosh, everybody needs this. Or, oh my gosh, I didn't know what I didn't know. What was that like for you? Is it like an emotional experience?
Well, I didn't get into the reason why I got super passionate about this because I didn't want to cry. But one of the things that I learned is that most people don't have a foundation. And that's really what we need to build on. Like within a house, right? You can't build a house on mud. Mm-hmm. Like you need a solid foundation. But there's so many people out there who don't have that. And that's what I didn't know. I thought I was building on a foundation. I thought I had it, but I wasn't even close. So that was the thing that really blew my mind, is that I could have been doing all this stuff for the next 20, 30 years the same way, and I'd still be in a crap place. I could have been doing everything quote unquote right, and everything could still be taken away from me in a second.
Taken away, or you could have been working for a paycheck for the rest of your life, saving into a 401k.
Yeah.
And not nothing, but not what you know now.
Yeah.
Which is what's one of those things now that you see for yourself that wasn't a possibility before you started working in the How Money Works world? Was it before the How Money Works world, or did you start in the How Many Works world?
Oh, it was before that.
Yeah. Well, it was something that opened up to you. It sounds like compound interest wasn't something you knew anything about.
I didn't know anything about that. Being able to invest my money into different vehicles. I didn't know that. I only knew the bank or the stock market, which was this ambiguous cloud of thing that I didn't understand. So compound interest being a concept that I didn't understand, that was something that blew my mind. The fact that there's ways to make your money last your entire lifetime, didn't even understand that concept before. The fact that you can protect your money if you were to pass away, like you can give it to your family without the government taking all of it. I didn't realize the government would take all of it.
Yeah.
For one, I thought it just went to your family. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to, you know, have a will or a trust or any of that stuff.
Like, yeah.
Wait, I have to? That's something that's necessary? Like, you think that's only for rich people. When you first start out, you think, oh, we don't have like $1 million. We're fine. You're not fine. Yeah. You're not fine. So I would have had to go through that with my family. Like, God forbid my parents pass away. I'd have to go through all that whole process, right? So these are the things that I was learning. And these are the things that I actually had to encounter with while I was taking my licenses 4 years ago. With my uncle. Like, that's the reason why I became super passionate about it, because he passed away, you know? And it was during the time that I was doing my licenses. And I don't know how much time we have, but I can get into that maybe another time.
Yeah,
maybe
we'll do it after the break. It's a good place to start. Right. So,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. And here's what I know, that there's someone listening to this show today. We don't know if they're listening to it live. We don't know if they're going to listen to it as a replay next week or in a year, but someone is going through the exact same thing and needs to hear what you have to say. So with that, we're going to take a couple minute break and come right back here to you getting your licenses 4 years ago and learning what you've learned about money so that we can help other women learn what they need to learn. Awesome. When it comes to money.
Sounds good.
I'm Lisa Chastain, your host of Real Money. We'll come back in just a couple of minutes with my guest, Jamie Bateau.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Not enough women are talking about money, and I am on a mission to change that. The truth is, so many women feel shame and guilt about the choices they are making financially. And if this is you, I want you to hear today that you are not alone. We are so capable of feeling confident about the choices we are making with our money. The problem is that for so many women, money isn't relatable. Industry experts are talking over your head.
And this show is the perfect place for you to improve your confidence and relationship with money. With Real Money, I share real stories of women who are tackling their most difficult financial challenges. We are here to help you hear and understand that you are not alone in feeling lost or confused about your finances so that you can build your confidence to learn how to make the right choices today. With Real Money, you're going to learn from other women how they tackle their biggest money challenges so that you can get out there and start creating the stability, freedom, clarity, and fun you've always wanted. Join me, Lisa Chastain, each week as we talk about real money with real women for real life.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
You are listening to Real Money with Lisa Chastain on the Voice America Business Channel. If you have a question for Lisa or her guests, you can call into the show at 866-472-5789. That's 866-472-5789. You can also send an email to Lisa at lisachastain.com. Now, let's get back to the show. Here is Lisa Chastain.
It's Lisa Chastain and Jamie Buteau. We are here in the second segment of Real Money, and we were just in a turning point, I would say, of Jamie's life. She and I both have, I've said this before on the show, I have a remarkable, what do you have?
A super note, A5X. I love this thing, man.
Yeah. So she's drawing faces as we're having these conversations. She's definitely an artist. And I just drew this like little stick figure, happy face. I'm not an artist. Anyway, so Jamie, there is a very emotional component, and you know, we don't know a lot of times why the universe is bringing us somewhere until we're there. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that was the case for you, that there were so many like bubbles like popping around you and ahas, and it sounds like you love to learn. So you jumped into learning about money, and then it was like, oh my gosh, there's so much. And that was my experience too, not having spoken about money growing up.
Yep.
There was so much I didn't know. And to this day, my parents are like, oh, we have everything taken care of. You'll find out when we're dead.
What?
Love you, mom and dad. I know, right? Because it just is like, they've got it handled, and they, you know, and so we don't know.
Oh my goodness.
And for so many families in America, like 75% of Americans are not working with a financial professional. Mm-hmm. And the money industry was built for people who had money to be able to protect their money, to be able to grow their money. And there's all these like secrets, maybe not intentionally keeping them as like part of the money industry, but there's so much jargon. There's so much to learn. And I felt like I was drinking from a fire hose when I got into the right. money industry. I was like, oh my gosh. And I was outside of my comfort zone. So walk us through that experience, because I think it's really important. One, just to, you know, I would love to learn. You were in the process of getting your licenses. And if you don't know this as a woman listening to the show, in order to be quote unquote a financial advisor, and that's a loose term that I'm going to use on the show today, but in order to be able to give financial advice and or be able to sell financial products, and it's mainly to be able to sell financial products, you have to have certain licenses, you have to know certain laws in order to have access to those different kinds of products to be able to help people. Not everybody who's a financial advisor has the same license. Some people can just sell insurance. Some people can just, you know, sell different kinds of annuities or financial products. So what Jamie was talking about is that she had to go through the process of getting certain licenses to be able to help certain people with certain financial products, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's the way I would describe it.
Yeah.
But you're going through that process to get into the financial industry. You don't know what you don't know. And then your uncle passed away.
Yeah.
So can you take us on that journey for the listeners?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see, maybe I don't have to put the times in there because I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, but, that's okay.
My uncle had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, And we thought, you know, the doctor said, you know, 1-2 years, he'll probably, you know, be able to live that long. And they were planning trips and stuff like that so that we could make sure that, you know, of course he enjoys his time. 4 months go by, we get a call saying he only has a week left, or he only has a few days left. Mm. This was the exact same time that I was studying, mm-hmm. right? We rush over there, right? He's in hospice care, and we get there. I'm asking my relatives, hey, I'm learning about all this stuff. Like, do you guys have everything together? Like, does he have life insurance? Are you guys going to be okay? Like, you have to take off of work and, you know, all this stuff. And they were like, yeah, he has stuff from his work. Don't worry about it. It's okay. I was like, okay, that's good. I want to make sure that you guys are okay, because he's an income earner. He's the only one. Like, I want to make sure you guys are good. 2 days later, he passes away. We're right there by his side. It's like 2 a.m. Mm. Man, such a surreal experience. But find out that he doesn't actually have life insurance. It was accidental death insurance. And you know what that means, Lisa. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to get any money from that. So I was like, if this is going to happen to my own family, there must be millions of people out there it's happening to, mm-hmm. you know? So I was like, there must be a reason why I'm getting my licenses right now and learning about all this stuff. And this is happening right in the middle of it. Like, this means that I need to be here. I need to be that person for my family, for my community, to make sure this doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. And that's what really, I didn't know if I wanted this to be my career, but after that happened, I was like, this has to be it. I just got super passionate about it.
Yeah. And what your family didn't know is that they had benefits through your uncle's employer. And they were benefits that a lot of employers give to their employees, and that have benefits, they think that they're covered. And what happened is that your uncle, and I didn't know this story, so I'm just digesting it as you're sharing it for the listener. And thank you for sharing this, is that the accidental death policy only covers accidental deaths, not cancer.
Yeah.
Right. And even then, those policies don't cover a lot. They might give you $20,000 or $25,000 to cover funeral expenses and to give your family a little time to grieve, but not the kind of protection that a life insurance policy would give.
Right.
And so you're learning about these things, and then you're bringing it full circle that your family was not, your uncle and I don't know, his wife and kids weren't protected to the extent that they thought they would be, which is really painful. And I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. And seeing that now that's your life's mission, and I want to talk about how money works. What does it really mean for you, knowing what you know now, having been through that experience with your family?
Oh my goodness. It's a mission, you know, it's a mission to educate as many people as possible, to impact as many people as possible, to make sure that everyone has that foundation that is needed. I don't want there to be a single family who has to go through that. I want them to know at least the basics, you know, what you need to do to make sure you build the wealth that you want to create. So it's a mission to me. It's a crusade to me. Like, I need to impact as many people as possible.
What is that foundation? So this isn't something that we've really talked about on the show yet. You're the first, actually, Sasha. Do you know Sasha?
Yes.
She was on the show a few months ago, but we didn't talk about this specifically. So in your experience with how you've learned money, and you were talking about the How Money Works book,
Yeah.
It's a great time for us to transition and share with the listener, what is that foundation that they need and that you're helping people put together today?
Okay. So in the book, it's the last half of the book, we talk about something called the 7 money milestones. And this is the foundation of what you should, you know, have when it comes to your money. So the first one is financial education, because if you don't know what you're doing, then you can't really do much of anything. So financial education, we believe that if you read that book, you'll have enough financial education to really have a good concept, a good grasp on what money is and how it works. So read that book. It's How Money Works, Stop Being a Sucker. It's such a great book. You can read it in an hour. Yeah, Stop Being a Sucker. It has a green lollipop on the front. Stop being a sucker. That's the first thing. Second thing, the question that I ask my clients all the time is like, what do you feel like is your most important asset in your life? And all of them say my family, you know, my car. No, they don't say my car. My home, like, you know, these types of things. And I was like, I honestly believe it's you. You are your most important asset. You are the one who, you know, went to school for that degree and is making all this money and doing all this stuff, but you don't protect yourself, right? Like, we're not told to protect ourselves on our incomes. So number two is proper protection, making sure you have the right insurances. Do you have health insurance, long-term care insurance, you know, life insurance, all these disability insurance, all these different things that will happen. This is not even if, will happen. Are you protected by it or from it? Number three is emergency fund. I was fantastic at this. I was great at saving because I'm a cheap shit. 2 years of savings. I was great. So I'm having that emergency fund. What we recommend for people is having 3 to 6 months of income, not just expenses, like some people say, but 3 or 6 months of income, especially since this whole COVID thing has happened. That should be a given. Like, people should not be like, oh, are you sure? No, yeah. people were not working for entire years, like for years.
Still not.
Still not.
Still aren't back to work.
So yeah, 3 to 6 months is reasonable, right? So 3 to 6 months of income. And number four is debt management. And this might not be the order. I think this is the order in the book, but debt management, you know, what does management mean? That means that you know exactly what your debts are, for one. You know what interest rates they're charging you. You know how much you're paying them. You know when you're going to be debt-free, if that's your goal. You know, if you have consumer debt and you're trying to be debt-free, then you know exactly when that date is. That's when you know you're managing it. If you don't know those things, you're not managing it.
Yeah,
you're kind of hoping it.
It's taking you for a ride.
Yeah, you're hoping it away,
right?
Which is not a great strategy, right? And number five is cash flow. This is what I was talking about earlier, is, man, you're seeing all of these headlines about how inflation is 8%, right? For your listeners, like, that means if your income is not growing by 8% a year,
you're not
catching up. You're not keeping up. Mm-hmm. Right. So you constantly have to be in this mindset of, okay, what talents do I need to increase my income? Mm-hmm. How do I increase my income every single year? Is it asking for that promotion? Is it getting a better job? Is it starting a business? Is it whatever that is? Is it selling my stuff in my house because I don't use it? Like, what is it that can increase your cash flow? Because a lot of people get complacent and they just keep doing the same thing every year. But really, it's about evolving. Like, that's what life is all about, is becoming better, right?
Yeah.
So cash flow is one of those things that we need to think about. And number six is now building wealth. Now we can talk about investing. Now we can talk about making our money grow, making our money work, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people just go straight to six.
Yeah, they do.
They think that this is okay. That's not okay.
Well, and here's the thing, like, for my listeners too, like, they're stuck on one or five, right? Like, that we may not even be complacent. Some people do. They just get really comfortable with making what they're making at the job that they're going to be at. Millennials are moving jobs every 5 to 6 mm-hmm. years. So they're not as stable financially that way, but they're looking for ways to grow. But I lost my train of thought with building wealth. Oh, people go straight to building wealth because there are so many financial experts out there, and Instagram is like heavy with experts saying,
oh,
you've got to
goodness.
Invest. Here's how you invest. You've got to invest. Here's how you invest.
Right.
And then all of a sudden people feel like they're behind the eight ball, and then they're not investing, and then they want to learn about what investing is. But here's the thing,
yeah.
Like, what you're saying and what I teach in my world too, is let's master the basics first.
You have to,
right?
You have to.
Let's master those things first. And then it's about finding where to put your money once you have it to invest it in the right, what we call vehicles in the finance industry, right? There's so many financial vehicles that you can put your money in. So let's slow it down and let's look at these things first, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And exactly. What's number seven? And number seven is now protecting that wealth.
Yeah.
Because it's not about how much you make. There's a lot of people who know how to make money.
Yeah.
It's about how much you keep, how much your family gets to keep when you're gone. Right. So, that's the foundation that people need, no matter how much money you make. Every single person needs all seven of those.
Agreed. And everybody gets stuck at a certain point. And if you're following certain financial experts, they're going to, you know, lead you down what they know
exactly
and how they've learned money. But this is a total package. And what I think is really important is that it doesn't all happen at once. Mm-mm. It's not all going to happen at once, but if you start somewhere, first and foremost, educate yourself. And as women, we like to feel like if we're educated, then we're going to take the right action, but we want to be educated first. Mm-hmm. Millennial women are the most educated women on the planet today. We own the majority. So if you look at degrees from associate's degree, bachelor's degree, master's degree, and PhDs and professional degrees, we hold 50% or more of all of those degrees. So women, we figured out the education piece. Now it's time to move it into financial education.
For sure.
And that's the mission that we're on.
Yeah.
In the short 4 years that you've been in the industry, it sounds like you're going to be in the industry for a whole lot longer than that.
Oh yeah.
What are some of the changes that you've been able to make, your family's been able to make, and that you believe you're seeing in our community even? Because I see you all over Facebook and, you know, we're in communities together. What's that been like for you?
Oh man. I mean, I practice what I preach like to a T. So remember when I was talking about like what I was doing before, I am completely, you know, I'm a poster child for my company and how money works and how to do all this stuff because I practice it, you know? So that's what's completely changed in my life is I don't have to worry about who I'm leaving behind. They're good. Mm-hmm. Like the peace of mind completely for that. So I don't worry about that at all. My family, they were the first people that I helped. I don't have to worry about them either. That alone takes so much off my shoulders.
Can I pause from moving forward from there? Because coming from a family that didn't talk about money, what was that like?
It was interesting. It took a lot of, not bulldozing through, but I needed to be persistent about it.
Because were your parents open?
My dad was very stubborn. Mm. That's just him. He's a stubborn Haitian man. And he thought he, you know, had it all together. Everything was fine. Don't worry about it. Then I find out it's not anything good about the situation, you know? But because I was persistent, because I had a mentorship, who was helping me talk to my parents, and they were the ones taking it over because I'm too close, right? I'm too close to my parents to handle their money. So they will handle it for me. They got into the right things. And I was able to retire my mom this year.
Amazing. Really?
Yeah.
How old is she?
She's 68.
I'm clapping. 67? You can't see it on this show, but I'm clapping. That's really cool.
Yeah. Because of the things we did 4 years ago, she didn't have to worry about the market crashes that were happening. She didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. Now she has income for life. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about her.
Yeah.
Like that. In itself, if I stopped my career right now, it would have been a success because I did that.
You know, it's an interesting parallel there is that you didn't worry about it before you were in the money industry because they told you not to worry about it. Mm-hmm. And then you didn't know what you didn't know. And so had you not gone into that educational piece, had you not, I guess, accepted your cousin's offer, you still might not be worrying about it, but for totally different reasons.
For totally different reasons. Just ignorance.
For ignorance. Mm-hmm. And these are families today. There are people listening to this show today who are like, yeah, I've never thought of it that way because not worrying is you're not worrying because you know what you need to know, because you're protected, because there's life insurance, because you're, I'm going through the steps, right? You've educated yourself.
Estate
you're
planning protected is done. Yourself. All that is done.
You have an emergency fund. You're managing your debt. Mind you, you're not saying you have to be totally and completely out of debt and that debt is bad. It's just that you're aware of the choices you're making and their impact on you financially.
Mm-hmm. And you're on the path.
And you're on the path.
That's it. You don't have to be debt free.
You don't have to. No. You get to live with yourself. You get to live with your choices, which is a different, you know, we've had this conversation on social media before, but yeah, I digress. So you're not worrying about your family anymore. What's next?
Now it's about impacting the community. Mm-hmm. I want to build my team as big as it can so that we can touch everybody, you know. There's not enough people out there teaching this stuff.
No. Why do you think that is?
One, people don't know. There's not enough people out there who knows this stuff. And two, it's too much information right now. We're in a overload of information age, mm-hmm. right? So people don't know what to listen to. People don't know who to trust. And I think that's a huge issue mm-hmm. right now, especially in social media, like you're talking about. There's all these people who are touting themselves as financial experts. And people are listening to them because they have a big following because of all these things. Yeah. And it's taking them into a different path or maybe even a wrong path. And we have to now combat that, you know, and it's, I don't really know the reason why it's, but that's one of the reasons is sure. people don't know what to listen to.
They don't know who to follow. They don't know who to listen to. They don't know who to trust. I think that's what it comes down to is finding trustworthy people they can relate to. And that's why this show is here, is that I want to invite guests on that. It's like, hey, you're relatable. Like you're real. You have a real story. You are accessible. You're on a mission. You're passionate. You're knowledgeable. All the things that qualify you to be helping people move their lives in the direction that they want to financially.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think another thing is that the people out there who are helping are only helping one piece of it. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get the entire thing.
There's a lot to know.
Yeah.
What I know, and we're getting close to the close of the show, which this show always goes by so fast. Like now I feel like we're getting into this really cool conversation. Yeah. So I'd love to invite you to come back and keep the conversation going. Is that finance is about elevation. Start with where you are today. And you can grow from there. There's real estate investing. There is investing. There's all that cool stuff that you can do with your money, but you've got to have the money to do stuff with first. Mm-hmm. So paying attention to and being mindful about how are you growing your income right now could be something that a woman could be taking away from this show today. So as we close the show, what are the couple things? Like if you're talking to another 31-year-old woman on the show today, what do you want her to know? Where does she start? Because it can be very overwhelming.
Start with that book.
Okay.
I'm serious. Like that book is so good.
Yeah.
So How Money Works, Stop Being a Sucker gives you the foundation you need. Oh, sorry. I don't know why I have an alarm right now, but that's a perfect place to start.
Yeah.
Because it's super simple. It gives you the action steps. And if you need a person to actually guide you through, like, I'd be happy to guide you through it. I don't charge for that,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that's the place to start. And it really is educating yourself. That's where you need to start. It's switching your mind, your mindset. You're fantastic at this, Lisa. Like, understanding your money type, your money behavior, your personality when it comes to money, and then working with it.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to pigeonhole yourself into something you're not. Figure out who you are and how you interact and think about money and then work with it.
That's right. Get in the game.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm hearing you say. Get in the game.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. Don't let your husband do it all.
No.
This is what I see all the time with when I sit down with women. It's like, oh yeah, my husband handles it. I'm like, what happens when he's gone?
Yo, right. Yeah. Take the driver's seat. Learn what you need to learn, get in the conversation. That is what we're here to do on Real Money. And Jamie, you've been an exceptional guest in that respect. Like here's where you start. Keep it simple, keep it real, be honest with yourself. And there's a whole lot you don't know, and stick with us here on Real Money. If you want to reach Jamie, how do they find you?
You can find me at howmanyworks.com/Jamie, J-A-M-E-E. Cool. I spell my name differently.
We'll put that on the show notes. So here's our final thought today. Jamie pulled this card. We do cards on the show. So I prosper wherever I turn. I now see opportunities for abundance everywhere. I am blessed and prospered. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you for listening to Real Money. I'm Lisa Chastain. You can find me at lisachastain.com, and we'll be right here, right back next week, next Monday on Real Money on Voice America Radio.
Thank you for listening to Real Money with Lisa Chastain on the Voice America Business Channel. Miss the opportunity to call in but have a question for Lisa regarding one of today's topics? You can send an email to Lisa at lisachastain.com. We will see you next time.